Hello, folks, and welcome along. This is Radio Huesca 24. And once again, we're jam-packed with exclusives from the forum. We got new goodies from Silly Boy, Larzafa, and after our previous episode with Simon Raleigh, the British invasion continues, my friends, in the form of Mark Flaherty, who's joined us for a fabulous interview discussing his story at Blue Morpho and subsequent book, Shedding the Layers. More on that soon. So let's get going. We've opened the show with School of Seven Bells, that lovely tribal drumming thing. It's called I Am Under No Disguise. And before I play the next tune, I want to say, whatever you do, try not to think about pixies dancing in forests. Well, that should have done the trick. You're listening to Radio Huesca with me, Zart, on Spirit Plants Radio.
Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.
Just be the tobacco, but the tobacco, sorry, the tobacco and the cactus. Could it just be those two things combined? Oh, the pines as well, and some of them as grand as redwoods would seem in my North American dreams. Yeah, what I'm trying to say is it seems crazily Native American up here at Eagle Oak. It might just be the tobacco. It might just be the San Pedro. But I'm getting seemingly North American, dreamingly time between time.
Unmistakably silly boy, our man on the ground with a pocket full of Pedro. And what has happened at Eagle Oak after this eternity spent trying to find the place? I don't mind telling you that the Native American dream has only just begun, people. Yet this could be like a whole new age dawning in the world of Silly Boy and the Forest. Watch this space. Now, if anyone listening is able to cast their minds back to Radio Asker 5 and 6, you deserve a medal and a goodie bag in the post, but that's not the point. We had an interview with Keith Aronowitz, maker of the Metamorphosis film. The film itself, Metamorphosis, was a documentary made on location at the Blue Morpho Center, home amongst others to Master Shaman Hamilton. If you saw the DVD, you will have indeed seen our next guest, Mark, himself a guest at the Blue Morpho Center, and has written up his story in a book called Shedding the Layers, which has already got some fabulous reviews online. We have, quote, brave, informative and touching, quote, an unusual and profound book, quote, a wonderfully inspiring book, and so on. Really good stuff. And there's no point saying much more because we're about to hear it from the horse's mouth. So here's what happened when Radio Asker caught up with Mark Flaherty. Welcome along to Radio Asker, Mark, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Hi, thanks very much. Great to be here.
Much of this interview is centered around your recent book, so why don't you give us a guide to what this is all about?
Well, the book's called Shedding the Layers, the subtitle How Ayahuasca Saved More Than My Skin. Well, in a nutshell, the story is that several years ago, I developed really severe eczema, skin condition, to the point that it covered every inch of my body. All my skin was falling off. I couldn't move. This was back in England, and basically the doctors couldn't help me, literally could do nothing for me. I tried all kinds of different alternative treatments, from acupuncture, Chinese herbs, different diets, Reiki, hypnotherapy, anything I could think of, and nothing would help. You know, really as a last resort, something in my mind kept saying, ayahuasca can help you, ayahuasca can help you. And I'd had some experience with ayahuasca when I'd been in Peru previously. It was, like I say, really an act of desperation. I didn't really know if it could help, but I'd run out of alternatives. I was in severe pain. I'd spent pretty much most of 1 year in bed, unable to move. So I ended up moving to Peru, living in the jungle with ayahuasca shamans for over the course of 6 years. I spent probably about 4 years in total living there and participating in hundreds of ayahuasca ceremonies in an attempt to heal myself. For anyone who's seen Keith Aronowitz's film Metamorphosis, I was the guy in that with the really messed up skin. Some of you may recognize me from that. So that's the story in a nutshell. It's available to buy the book on Amazon in paperback or Kindle, and also all the other different ebook formats you can get. And also, if you want, for a limited time only, you can buy it directly from myself and get yourself a signed copy. So you can get that from my website, which is shedding-the-layers.com.
Well, let's do the obvious and begin at the beginning, but in this case, quite literally, because as a means of an introduction that I thought I could do no finer, Mark, would you do us the honour of reading the opening paragraphs from the book out loud, please?
The face looking back at me in the mirror is a snarl of bloody, cracked skin, oozing a foul-smelling yellow liquid that trickles unchecked down its cheeks. The eyes are lifeless and defeated after months of agony. All features are frozen in place by the knowledge that the slightest twitch of the mouth or arch of an eyebrow is enough to split the skin open once more. I consider the daunting tasks ahead of me. Putting on clothes, walking downstairs, eating breakfast and returning to my room for another session of mindless daytime TV. I sigh and look down at the floor, littered with layers of dead skin. No matter how much I vacuum, it's impossible to keep it clean. As I do every morning, I inspect my body, hoping to find any evidence that this torture will end. My neck and chest are as diseased as my face. My arms and hands, also throbbing and bruised purple like my face, are getting worse. They're etched with deep, infected cuts and inflamed scratch marks, casualties of the interminable itching. This is my life, a moment-by-moment struggle to survive with severe eczema. I take a deep breath and reach for the nearest shirt.
All right, thank you very much. And just as I'd hoped, that seems to have set the scene nicely for where the rest of this adventure will take us. So before we kick off, let's just dwell on who you were before any of this happened, a theme that is common in many of us Western folk. There is a missing spiritual aspect or discipline to our lives that we can't quite identify or seem to grasp. Is there anything you want to say in general on that theme?
I give sort of a brief lowdown, I suppose, of who I was before ayahuasca, because like you say, it was hugely important in the whole story. And really, from as young as I can remember, there was always this sense of something's missing, looking for something. You know, I just felt very disconnected from other people, from society. I was pretty unhappy. I lived in a lot of fear of almost everything. It's almost like having stage fright of life. I kept how screwed up I was pretty well hidden. Very, very few people, if anyone, would have known. There was two sides to it. Like, on the one hand, I was really rational and logical and skeptical, and it's like, this world is all there is, you know, this 3D reality. I was fascinated by spiritual literature, by, you know, stories, by hearing about psychics and clairvoyance and ghosts and all these kinds of things, but just couldn't believe it was true. Yet at the same time, there was just like this driving force, you know, compelling me to look into it and search, and, you know, almost like hoping, wishing it was true, but really knowing it wasn't. So, you know, I read a lot of spiritual books. I got into yoga and Tai Chi and meditation. Yeah, basically just searching for, it wasn't anything concrete. It was this vague sense that something was missing, that there has to be more to life than this, while at the same time knowing there wasn't.
Aha. And do you remember a time when the old Mark had possibly never heard of ayahuasca? Is it something that crept in slowly? Do you remember the first time you became actually aware of the idea?
So the first time I heard about it, I was traveling in Peru. This was in 2004, my first visit to South America. And I'd basically gone traveling for a year. At the time, I was working as a computer programmer in London, and, you know, things on the surface were all looking very good. I had a good job, great social life. You know, things on the outside looked rosy, but I was getting more and more miserable, more and more a sense of, not quite panic, but I would look around my office and I'd be like, oh my God, in 30 years time, I'm going to be sitting here. It terrified me. And, you know, going traveling scared me, but it was like it scared me slightly less. And it was the only idea I had for what I could do to sort of break out of the cycle and the lifestyle I was in. So I quit my job and I went to South America. When I was in Peru, I met up a really good friend from home, was living in Cuzco at the time. So I went to see him, and he told me about ayahuasca. He was a very spiritual guy, really one of the nicest people I've ever met, really down to earth, really sorted. But he had this, from my perspective then, really different outlook on life. You know, he's really into his spirits. You know, to him, they were totally real. The spiritual life was as real as anything else. And he was telling me one day as we sat in this coffee shop in Cusco, he started telling me about his ayahuasca experiences. And the weird thing is, the minute he mentioned ayahuasca, it just sounded familiar. There was like something about it that was instantly, I knew that this was something I had to experience for myself. You know, I thought, if anything can help me figure out, you know, my big questions about life and, you know, sort of help me with my malaise, then ayahuasca had to be the thing to do it.
Okay, so let's get stuck into the thing and the doing of it. In the light of most of your experiences and the context they took place in, it seems your first experience was not at all indicative of what ayahuasca might be and what it might be to you. I guess if you wouldn't mind just talking us through your very first ayahuasca experience.
The very first time, my very first experience with ayahuasca was, it was in Cusco with a guy that my friend had recommended, and he was a Spanish guy living there. He had a little house on the edge of town. And so I went with a couple of friends to a Saturday evening at 8 o'clock. We turned up at his door clutching our blankets because, you know, my friend had said, oh yeah, ayahuasca can make you very cold, so make sure you're well wrapped up. So we all turned up clutching our blankets, filed into his house. The strangest thing about it was how normal it was, really. You know, we went into the house and it was just this little, nice little suburban house. The guy's wife and little daughter were wandering around the house. And, you know, the only difference to any normal living room, really, was the fact that they'd moved the sofas and the chairs out of the room, and there was just cushions around the edges of the wall that we sat down on. So yeah, there was three of us, and then there was a few local Peruvians came in. So we all sat down on the floor. The shaman, Albert, his name was, he served us our glasses of ayahuasca, and we drank it together. It was pretty disgusting, but not as, it wasn't quite as foul as I've been led to believe. And then we sat around for a few minutes before he turned the lights out. And so it was pitch black. He lit some incense, and then he started playing kind of new agey CDs. Now, at the time, I didn't really know what ayahuasca was or what shamanism was, really. Looking back now, I see that this guy wasn't really a shaman. It wasn't what I would now call a proper ayahuasca ceremony. It was very different to the experiences I later had in the jungle. But having said that, it was enough to open my eyes to kind of feel like, oh yeah, there is something going on here. I remember for most of the experience, I was kind of slumped on the floor, like there was this heavy weight pressing on me. I couldn't really move, and just feeling really nauseous the whole night. At some point, Albert came over and he put some Agua Florida flowered water on my head. And it's hard to explain, but I suddenly had this kind of sensation of rising up, like a lot of the heaviness was lifted. And I was having these thoughts like, I am a child of God kind of thing, which for me back then was pretty weird. And I didn't really know where it was coming from or even what it meant, but there was just this sense of there's some truth in this. I don't know what it is, and something not easy to put into words, other than the sense of when I'd taken drugs, it felt like I was getting out of it, kind of escapism, whereas ayahuasca had this sense of being much more, just more real. This is putting me in touch with something deeper in myself. So essentially, that was my first experience of ayahuasca, and it wasn't incredibly profound, but it was enough to make me think that there's something in this and I want to experience more of it.
And that wider context that I refer to was, in fact, what would be your repeated lengthy retreats at the Blue Morpho Center. The Blue Morpho name, I guess, is familiar to most people who've had a quick browse through online ayahuasca resources, but Why not tell us how Blue Morpho first came into your life, Mark?
It was a few days later. I was in little market town in the Sacred Valley outside of Cuzco. I just happened to see this poster on the wall advertising ayahuasca retreats in the jungle. At that point, I didn't really realize that these things existed, you know, that you could go for a week and do a few ayahuasca ceremonies in its sort of traditional setting, because it, you know, it comes, it grows from the Amazon, and it's from the Amazon rather than the mountains of Cuzco. As soon as I saw that poster, I thought, yes, this is what I have to do. You know, it felt like in the rest of my travels in South America, it was just the most important thing. After a while of sort of traveling and being a tourist, I'd got bored of, yeah, okay, another beautiful site. And then this ayahuasca thing came along, and it was like, oh, this is it. You know, it almost felt like this is why I've come to South America. The sense was that strong. So I went back to Cuzco and got on the internet to book this retreat. It was in the jungle town of Puerto Maldonado, which is fairly near Cuzco in Peru. While I was on there, I just happened to Google to see if there was any other people doing a similar kind of thing. And through that Google search, basically came across Blue Morpho. They were based right in the other end of the country, outside of Iquitos, which is two flights away from Cuzco. So it wasn't close, but it was pure greed, really, that made me go there instead of the other place, because Blue Morpho were offering 5 ayahuasca ceremonies in a week. The other place was offering 3. I thought, no, I need 5. Not knowing at the time quite how potent or powerful even one could be. I mean, they looked good. They looked professional. You know, I wouldn't have just gone with anyone. So that was how I found them. Maybe about a month later was when I flew to Iquitos to spend a week with them.
So paint us a bit of a picture of what is involved in getting to Blue Morpho. How is life once you arrive? And more importantly, how did your first ceremonies go?
Just getting out to the camp was quite an amazing experience. First of all, an overnight ferry ride of about 14 hours. And then from there, we had to get in a little canoe, a dugout canoe with a little motorboat engine on it. And that was another 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, we were really going deep, deep into the jungle and as remote as I'd ever been. And, you know, that alone was enough to start bringing up some fears, really. It was like, I'm really out on a limb here. And part of me was excited, and there was like this mixture of excitement and fear, not quite terror, but certainly strong fear of like, what have I got myself into? So we got out to camp, and well, there was 3 guests, me and 2 other guests, and then there was the 2 shamans, which was Hamilton Souther and Don Alberto Torres Davila. Alberto, he was about 50 at the time, and he'd been drinking ayahuasca since he was 9. You know, he was local to the area, so I felt pretty safe in his hands, and he trained Hamilton. Hamilton had only recently become a master shaman in his own right. So those were the 2 guys that were leading the ceremony. And the first day there, we cooked our own ayahuasca, or at least helped them to cook, which was a great experience. You know, we went out into the jungle with them, and they chopped the vines down and collected barks of the various medicinal trees. And, you know, the whole thing was just really exotic. You know, it was just very, very different to anywhere I'd been and anything I'd done before. And I felt really good about it. You know, it was somewhat terrifying, but I'd reached a point in my life where I was willing to actually face my fears, whereas in the past I'd always been running away from anything that scared me. So we cooked the ayahuasca, and then that evening was the first ceremony. And back then we started late. It was 9 o'clock before the ceremony began, which, you know, when you're in the jungle and it gets dark at 6 o'clock and it's just pitch black, so there's nothing to do for 3 hours really but lie in bed and feel anxious. And so it was a really, really long wait for the ceremony. And then we got in there, and the setup is like a little wooden lodge, and it's screened so it keeps out most of the bugs, but not all of them. As guests, we sat on mattresses on the floor, You know, we've got puke bucket, as they like to call it there. And the two shamans sit in front of us. They're in rocking chairs, and you know, they sat there smoking their mapacho, their jungle tobacco, and they got all these bottles of different exotic potions, which they kind of rub all over their bodies as spiritual protection, as Hamilton told us. And then they serve the ayahuasca. So the first thing they do is sing their ikaros into it. And then one by one, they hand us this small metal cup. And the first thing I noticed was it was much lower amount, a much smaller dose of ayahuasca than we had in Cuzco. So we all drink, and then the lights go out. And, you know, once the ayahuasca starts to kick in, well, the first thing I experienced really was seeing these geometric patterns. It didn't matter if my eyes were open or closed, they were there. As the shamans sing their different ikaros, the patterns change, and the colors change, and it's just this constant movement, which Hamilton told us afterwards is the patterns that you're seeing. It's the medicine, and it's the medicine spirits, but you're seeing it in energetic form, if you like, rather than actually, you know, seeing physical spirits. The first really profound thing that happened was, you know, first of all, I started getting all these negative thoughts and feelings coming up. And all of a sudden, it was like Hamilton, who was sat a good few feet over, you know, away from me, all of a sudden, it was like he was right next to me. It was like this telepathic connection, which I'd never had in life before and didn't really think was possible, but, you know, was undeniable when it happened. Basically, I started to panic because it's like, oh my God, like, he knows all my secrets. He knows all my thoughts. That is how he was doing his work, was connecting to me to actually help me release all of this stuff. You know, all these negative thoughts were what were being purged out of me. And, you know, in ayahuasca, you experience the stuff sort of passing through your consciousness as it's coming out. But at the time, it was just this sort of panic and terror and fear of, you know, like I'd spent my whole life trying to pretend I was okay and there was nothing wrong with me, and, you know, not telling anyone what was really going on with me ever. And all of a sudden, there was this guy just like seeing straight through all that, seeing all my bullshit in there. It wasn't a very pleasant experience.
One day at a time, we can learn to leave the past behind. One day at a time, we can look the future in the eye. One day at a time, we can learn to live. Gates of the garden are open. Wide and the trusting. Seventy thousand will enter. Of them without reckoning. One day at a time, we can learn to leave our fears behind. One day at a time, we can stare our hopes in the eye. One day at a time, we can learn to live.
This song song is called One Day at a Time by Yusuf Islam, the artist formerly known as Cat Stevens. It's a song that I used to listen to a lot during the darkest of times and was something that used to help me get through those days.
And if you meet the evening, don't wait for the sun to rise. One day at a time, we can leave all treasures behind. One day at a time, we can watch the clocks unwind. One day at a time, a child is born into this world, eyes blind. One day he will find his sight and glimpse another kind of light to live by. One day, one day at a time, we can put machines behind. One day at a time, we can learn how birds survive. One day at a time, we can learn to fly.
I sense a sense, fulfilling my senses, easy to see in the past tense, following my feet with my heart, my intent speaks, my love seeks, you heal my sorrow, my weep. If this is not real, then why am I at peace? In the world of rage, greed, and deceit, you may call me weak or meek when you see me on the street. Yet I know the strength of my sense, her love, has no defeat. Me in the glee, I hear you smile every time I witness a twinkle of magic, a nibble of love, an appearance of spirit. Everyone is waiting for the greatest revelation. I see you in the tiniest of situations, quick as a wink, caught in a thought, on the brink of, guess not. You create what I see. You create me. You create we. What I would like to see more of is love. To hold you in the light. To hold you through the night. To hold you with all my might. You and me in the glee. Sunset, through the bare trees, the longest shadow is me. Evening, of a cloudless sky, the shine of those stars there is mine. Midnight blue, is my love for you deep and true? The dawn has all along been my song. You'll find me on the tip of your nose, in your heart of gold, in the bowl of your soul. There I'll be, grinning.
This is Radio Waska.
Something that's kind of self-evident from the book, but probably worth just pointing out once, is that your intention, the reasons you were there, were exclusively to reveal the source of your illness, or at least procure some more information regarding that issue. Was that something that was at the front of your mind? Were you aware that that was your intent all along?
It was. When I first decided to drink ayahuasca and for going to Blue Morpho, there were two reasons to it. You know, there was the what I might call my emotional issues, my fear and how shut down I was. But also there was the physical condition. There was the eczema, which at this point, you know, this is before the introduction of the book that we quoted where it was really severe. That hadn't happened yet, but it was getting worse and it was starting to really affect my daily life. So yeah, I was looking to heal that as well as the emotional stuff. And if anything, more, you know, that was more important because the physical thing was getting more and more debilitating as the months went on. In that first ayahuasca ceremony, I got this sense of, I could feel, it was like in my nervous system that what I was sure was the root cause of it. And it was almost, you know, there was like this electricity shooting down there and it was kind of focused. It would go down into my left foot. As weird as the experience was to me, something told me that there was something in my left foot causing the illness. It was like, you know, in ayahuasca, being opened up, my energetic body being opened up in that way, it was, everything was kind of traveling down into there, and I could feel the medicine, the ayahuasca, working on it during the ceremony. And, you know, kind of back then had this sense that, oh, if only I can throw up, you know, then it'll be done and I'll be healed and that will be that, you know, not realizing then quite how long a process it would be and quite what I'd begun by deciding to drink ayahuasca in the first place.
So not only is it a great story, I must say, Mark, the writing itself is really very rewarding. There's some hilarious places, some magnificently rich descriptions of events and circumstances. One that caught my eye was a ceremony which resulted in, quote, death would be a welcome alternative, unquote. So let me ask you, Mark, can you explain how you got to a place where death would indeed be a welcome alternative?
This is my second ayahuasca ceremony with Blue Morpho. What happened was it was a much more physical experience. Shortly after drinking the ayahuasca, I found myself, I was on my mat and I was like writhing around on the floor. I couldn't keep still. Really, really uncomfortable. And all of a sudden, I find I'm just sort of flailing my arms and legs wildly and just kicking the legs on my legs on top on the floor as strongly as possible and just screaming at the top of my lungs that, you know, I'm kind of lost most of my sense of reason by this point, and I didn't really know what was going on. I was just screaming, get it out of me, get it out of me, you know, I don't want it anymore. Then everything kind of disappeared. It was just total mental chaos, which even now I can't really put into words other than to say that, you know, it was just like a period of total insanity, of no coherence, no idea of what was going on. And, you know, Hamilton and a couple of the helpers came over to try and calm me down. And Hamilton was there by my legs and I just swung and kicked him really hard in the head. You know, it was a pretty good shot. And after that, he like pinned me down and they're trying to restrain me and I calm down. And all of a sudden I like flip up. I don't know to this day how I did it, but from a lying position, I flipped up backwards onto my head, hanging in midair, doing a headstand, arms and legs out, which I'm no breakdancer. I've never done that before and I've never done it since, but that happened. So Hamilton, he decided, well, this isn't working. I'm not going to calm down. So he dragged me to the shower because with ayahuasca, water can have a really sort of calming effect. It can bring down the level of the mariación, which essentially is a word for the total effects of the ayahuasca. You know, everything that happens in ayahuasca can be considered the mariación. He grabs me and puts me in the shower and, you know, we're both in there fully clothed. He's got me in a bear hug as the water's raining down on us. And I'm still sort of flailing and trying to hit him. And eventually, I don't know how long we're in there, but eventually the water starts to have an effect. And I calm down a bit and he sits me down on the floor outside the shower. he says to me, okay, so focus on light, focus on love, go into your heart. Just the mention of that word, the heart, it was absolutely terrifying. For whatever reason, like the thought of love and the heart to me was really scary. As I tried to focus on my heart, there was just, I saw all these kind of demonic entities and like these foul, grotesque faces and spirits coming out of me, just screaming all that stuff as they were coming out. You're worthless, you know, you don't deserve to be happy, all of that stuff. And the whole thing, like the physical, mental and emotional sensations were just overwhelmingly horrendous. Firstly, I'm thinking, I am never, ever, ever doing this again. And then the second thing I think is, actually, I would quite like to die right now, because that has to be preferable to this. That didn't happen. But what did happen was the intensity just got stronger and stronger and stronger. It was almost like everything was heading towards this single point. And I was just focusing on it. It was, you know, I thought like my head was going to split apart or something, but it just ramped up and up and up and got more and more intense. And then finally, something cracked, something broke, and I vomited a few times. And it was, you know, the foulest thing I've ever smelled. It was truly horrendous. But instantly, all of that chaos, all of that craziness, it disappeared. I just felt all this sense of peace and calmness rush into me. I'm still sat outside the shower in the wooden hut. You know, I look around and it just looks so beautiful. You know, I've never seen anything look as beautiful as that before. And, you know, like objectively, it's the same place that it was before, but you know, I guess you could say I was seeing through my heart rather than my mind for once. It all just looked really beautiful. And then I noticed there was this lady sitting there. You know, at this point, I'm feeling like I'm pretty much back down in a normal state of awareness. You know, I'm calm and at peace. It doesn't feel like the ayahuasca's like having any effects anymore. But there's this woman sitting there who's got sort of long white hair and just sitting there looking really, really serene and calm and, you know, just radiating this love and beauty. I look at her and she doesn't say anything, but telepathically I just hear, I'm your guardian angel. And again, the strangest thing about it was how normal it seemed. Oh yeah, of course, you know, there's my guardian angel. That's nice. Yeah, I just sat there grinning and feeling amazing, better than I felt in my life. Just thinking like, oh, so that answers that question then. Spirits really do exist. Okay, good.
So if I were to mention the words LSD, left foot and African voodoo, chances are it would mean very little or nothing to anybody on the planet except you, Mark. So join the dots for us. Tell us a story, please. You've already mentioned it. The left foot, the LSD and the African voodoo.
So what happened later in that week at Blue Morpho, Hamilton told me that he had seen that I had something in my left foot, and he saw it as like this sort of black, hairy, almost like sea urchin type spirit that was lodged in there. Basically, over the course of two ceremonies, he sucks this thing out of me. He was sucking on my foot, on the bottom of my foot, and it was the weirdest sensation. It was like he was actually inside it. That's the only way to describe it. It was like I could feel something that was him inside me pulling this thing out. It took him maybe like half an hour in total over the two ceremonies to get this thing out. And he said it had these tendrils that went all the way up my left leg, across my back and into my neck. He told me that it came from a time when I'd taken LSD. Which was something as a surprise, I have to say, but made total sense. You know, I realized then what had happened. before I get into the actual LSD story, it's worth mentioning that from the next day that he'd sucked that thing out, it physically felt different in my body. Whereas before, when I scratched my skin or scratched the eczema, I would feel this like lightning bolt of energy shoot down into my left foot. And, you know, my foot would shake and throb. That no longer happened. 2.5 years before I ended up at Blue Morpho, I'd gone to Africa with some friends to a solar eclipse dance music festival. While there, one night, I took LSD and just happened to tread on something on the floor, like this talisman of animal hairs that was on the ground in this festival in Zambia and was full of witchcraft. And when I trod on this thing, because my energetic body was wide open from the LSD, this something came up into my foot, got lodged there, and then over time started to spread throughout my body. Nearly 12 months after that, the eczema first started to appear, but it was like little by little, this witchcraft and this bad energy, if you like, was spreading more and more throughout my body, almost like taking over it. And then at some point it started to burst out through the skin as eczema. And from that point onwards, it just got worse and worse and worse.
All right, so you've already explained that you began this adventure with a rather skeptical, doubting mind. So how did the mind of the skeptic react to being given a very specific diagnosis to the cause of one of your problems?
You know, by that point, I'd lost a lot of my skepticism. You know, I'd been at Blue Morpho for a week and I'd had direct experience of spirits that I couldn't deny. You know, it was, I couldn't believe it until I had the experience. But once I had the experience, there was just no doubt. I now knew spirits existed.
Cielo, cielo, ayahuasca, alto y manda y tronco sin, punta y manda y cocochito, florcitan y oloros, brilla, brilla de belbella, pura, pura medicina, fresco, fresco y caroini, cuerpocito cutaya, brilla, brilla de belbella, pura, pura medicina, hay, nay, 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 hay, nay, 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 nay. Bria, bria, rebelbella, shungo y nisito y fiti. Bria, bria, rebelbella, cuerpo nito kutaya. Cielo, cielo, ayahuasca, alto y manda y tronco sin. Punta y manda y cocochito, florcita y ololo. Hay, nay, 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 hay, nay, 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 nay. Hay, nay, 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 hay, nay, 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 nay. Hi nine 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 Hi nine 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 hi nine 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 nine.
Okay, so this is Deptford Grid substation at the edge of the Thames. I've been coming here for 20, 21 years, on and off. I like the drone of the electricity. I like the way it's just electricity, pure and simple. I love the way you can walk through the overtones. And I especially like the strange conjunction of that with the sound of the river and the sound of people walking through the pebbles. It seems quite a secret place to me. Not many people seem to know about it. It's screaming for some sort of site-specific performance, I think. But I just keep coming back to it at the moment and really like it. Yeah.
We can get more, it's more sunny, literally, over here, somehow.
That. It's called Deptford Grid Substation from the album Sonic Postcards. It's a couple of guys out and about attempting to sing overtones with an electricity substation next to the river. Awesome stuff, and I'm very much digging their connection to the pure spirit of electricity, but I cannot get rid of the mental picture of Spinal Tap at the grave of Elvis Presley trying to sort the harmonies out. Well, that's a rough segue involving sound and spirit, because what came before it was the beautiful Cielo Ayahuasca, an Icaro from Mimi Butacarvely, one of Mark's colleagues at Blue Morpho. And Mark did a superb introduction to the Icaro from Mimi, but I didn't edit it in because I wanted to keep the fade as it was and everything. But Mark basically says the music helps him to keep grounded and in touch with the spirit of the medicine. Massive thanks to Mark. We got a run now, but there's more of everything next time. We're going to finish with Jessica Hoop. This has been Mizart on Radio Asker. Be seeing ya.
Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.